everybody, and welcome to episode 57 of Magic FM. I'm Gabby Sparks, one of your hosts today, and I'm joined by Mashi Scanlon. As always, Mashi, welcome. How are you?
I'm doing great, Gabby. How are you? I see we already talked about this, but you got this new desk.
I do. I'm in the process of changing desks, so currently there's just a bonus desk behind me.
You know, I think what you could do, though, is just have like a square. Sure, you're going to have to crawl out at the end of the day, but you have a square around you of pure desk productivity. You
know? Is this like it's like a hacker's desk? Like, I just have monitors all over the desk so I can just turn around and then be on the other computer and then turn around and be on another computer and I'm just hacking on three desks?
It would be awesome.
I would look so cool. I can pull out floppy disks out of my yoga pants.
Oh my God. Floppy. Because, you know, all hackers carry floppy disks on them these days.
They do in hackers. I believe they literally pull out floppy disks in hackers.
I was going to say, this is a product of you watching hackers. Can you imagine if Luis had a setup with four desks? You guys don't have enough cups in that house to support four desks.
No. We have a quota of how many cups per desk in this household, and not enough cups to fulfill that. Because there's like 10 per desk, so, you know, it's a lot of cups.
To be clear, they're not short on cups there. They just have Luis, if anyone has never, I don't know, he hasn't posted a picture in a while of what his like stream setup is. And I would say his desk at any given time appears to be about 50 to 60% cups.
So here's a funny fact for those who haven't followed the saga of the cups over the last like 3 years or whatever. It's really been like 3 or 4 years, dude. We don't have enough room in the pantry or like in the cupboard where the cups go for them to all be there. But we just keep getting more cups because we're always short cups. The reason is they just all live downstairs in Luis's office. So if they're ever all clean at the same time, they don't fit in the cupboard. But it's never a problem.
That never happens.
Because they're always down there.
There's no use case where they're all in the cupboard, so it doesn't matter.
No, yeah, so. Exactly. So, yeah, that is the cup saga. There's usually 10 cups-ish down there, plus some plates and miscellaneous things.
I have to confess, on a much lower scale, with me, it's coffee cups. Like, this is yesterday's coffee cup, this is today's coffee cup.
Wow, two cups, wow.
Well,
so many.
The only reason it doesn't back up too much is once every day or two, Elaine comes down and how's your day going? Is everything okay? And she ends up walking out of the room.
I'm going to take some cups now.
Yeah. So, but it's funny because we have the same situation with our coffee cups. Not if all the coffee cups are cleaned and ready to go, they don't fit in our cupboard either. So I'm helping.
Yeah. I'm helping. You're just doing your part, Mashi.
Exactly. I'm just helping things out here. So.
It is great to see you again. We didn't have an episode of Magic FM last week. I actually had a few people ask if like everything was okay with the podcast because that's how good of a job we do not missing a podcast episode. I know, like clockwork. But I did want to shout out that we do have a Twitter account where we post updates to the podcast if there ever is any. So if you haven't seen it, it's twitter.com/MagicFM podcast. And we post whenever a new episode is out there. If we ever have follow-ups to something we talked about on the podcast episode, like the one time we had the cube box that Luis and Chion used to play on, I actually like found the picture of that box and we tweeted it out. So if you wanted to check out updates on the podcast or if there's ever not an episode and you want to know what happened, you can find that all on the Twitter account. But thank you to everybody who cared that there wasn't an episode last week. That was, it was very kind of people. They're like, we just want to check, is everything okay?
Yeah, it's true. That was only the second week we've ever missed.
That was
Phoenix
really cool.
And Thanksgiving. Yeah. So, thank you, everyone. It's always awesome because it's kind of invisible, right? We do this podcast every week and that part's visible, but we can see the numbers of people who are listening and downloading and watching on YouTube and stuff. But you don't kind of feel the community as much until a situation like this happens. You're like, oh my gosh, people
were looking for this episode and there wasn't one last week.
Exactly. Yeah. So thank you all for that. Really, no, seriously, it warms my heart.
Yeah, it's really cute. I appreciate everybody who asked about it. But yeah, that's the reason we didn't have an episode last week. We just spent some time doing a lot of cooking on Thanksgiving. But we're back. We're back this week with more Magic FM. So yeah, just wanted to shout out the Twitter account for those who don't know. Also, if you haven't seen it, there is a video component to this podcast. We mentioned it at the end of every episode, but it is on youtube.com/channelfireball. You can also see it on Channel Fireball. Just whenever the new episode comes out, it'll be a page as like an article, and you can take a look at the videos there as well.
So, and I think the video adds a ton, by the way.
Oh, yeah.
Both Gabby and I are very
You get to
emotive.
See the bonus desk I have, hacker style.
and there's a lot of faces and gestures and gesticulation. So I do think it's always worthwhile to check out the video if you have the time and the inclination. So, all right. Well, it's kind of a slow news week, Gabby.
It was.
So we're gonna hit an evergreen topic. We're going to talk about the reserve list, which is
bum, bum, bum.
Tough. Yeah, tough treading. Before we dive into it, though, we should shout out the sponsor, channelfireball.com. And what are we talking about this week, Gabby?
I wanted us to talk about CFB Pro, because CFB Pro is awesome. And if you don't know about it, I also wanted to mention what are some of the other perks to CFB Pro, aside from reading the content, which is the main mm-hmm. reason that CFB Pro exists. So if you're not part of CFB Pro, it will let you see all the articles by Team CFB, and those also come with pretty cool articles whenever the new set releases. So Kaldheim is coming out soon. If you want to see Luis's set reviews for Limited and also for Constructed, that's how you're going to get access to them. So since new set's coming out, I just wanted to shout it out. But some of the other stuff that people may not know about, the CFB Pro Showdown is really cool. Mm-hmm. We've shouted it out a couple of times here in the podcast, but the CFB Pro Showdown is essentially... a tournament that you can play in for free that is for the CFB Pro subscribers. And it always comes with a fun end boss. Like, I think the, don't quote me on this because it's not 100% locked in, but Huey will be the end boss for January.
Nice.
And also on that note, I guess there is not actually a CFB Pro Showdown this December. It is pushed right to the January one. So if you haven't seen that from CFB elsewhere, you heard it here.
You heard it here. Yeah.
There's also things like
CFB Pro deals.
Yep. Tell us about the CFB Pro deals. No, go for it, Mashi.
There's a weekly email that goes out. And it's so funny because people, even the CFB Pro members, I don't think know about this. So there is an email and it goes out and it has exclusive deals. You can only get them if you are a member of CFB Pro. And sometimes, like, I think the best one was like, we had boxes of Commander Legends. And just by being a member of CFB Pro, you could save $20. Cash, just $20 off of a box of Commander Legends. It's only $5 a month or $10 a month with $10 store credit back or whatever to join CFB Pro. So it's just like, if you wanted to buy a box of Commander Legends, it was like a free roll that month. You could pay for CFB Pro and save $15 and blah, 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 blah. So there's deals every week, every Friday. I think actually Black Friday, we didn't do one because we had so many deals on the website.
Right. But that's just deals for Black Friday.
Right. Every Friday, there are exclusive deals. You have to be a member of CFB Pro to get those deals. Even if you get the email, you have to sign into your CFB Pro account. So it's not something that's like, oh, well, someone publishes it to Reddit or something and anyone can get it. No, it doesn't work that way. You've got to be a member of CFB Pro. There are exclusive deals just for CFB Pro.
Yeah.
So I think
to give you another example, we talked about this on the podcast also a few episodes ago. But CFB was doing a box break, which is basically opening a box of product. Mm. And John and Mashi were the ones that did the last one. It was at the new warehouse. It was really fun. I really enjoyed it. But if you wanted to buy, like, the way box breaks work is you can buy a color or you can buy like some percent of the box that's being opened. It's split up in different ways. And that was available to CFB Pro members. So like, you could only do that if you were part of CFB Pro. You get an email that let you buy the stuff from the box break. So mm-hmm. CFB Pro is also where CFB goes to test out new things and like try out just different ways of enjoying Magic or opening product and all that sort of stuff. So if you haven't taken a look at CFB Pro, it's a great time to do so, especially leading up to Kaldheim.
That, I mean, and I think that you can't understate that. Like, you get the set reviews from Luis, you get all the stuff from Ben and Ethan, the Lords of Limited, you get mm-hmm. Alex, Court of Calls, so if you want to draft the new set, you get all that. Hey, draft's not your thing, play Standard. You know what you get? All of Team CFB brewing all the new cards in Kaldheim into the Standard decks. Like, this is the Standard deck I'm playing. And like, the one that always pops in my head is when Icoria came out, there were all these Gyarados decks. Now, they didn't end up catching on because it turns out Counterspell is really good against
Gyarados. Wait, did you say Gyarados? Then. What did you say?
Yeah.
Gyarados?
Gyarados. Gyarados.
What are you... Gyarados? What are you talking about?
Yeah. Remember, it's like the companion, and then when you play the companion, you get to play... What's Cascade? You basically get to Cascade. You know, Gyarados.
Gyarados is a Pokemon. I'm trying to figure out what magic are you talking about.
Oh my god, am I totally...
Gyarados? You're not thinking of Maelstrom Wanderer, right? Cascade.
No. Gyarados.
Am I going crazy?
Gyarados?
Okay, now I'm Googling.
That's Googling. A Pokemon. Gyarados is a fish. It's like a water type. Gyarados, I think, might be a dragon type.
No, Gyarados. It's a companion from Ikoria. I am not crazy.
Maybe I'm losing it. I believe you if I'm losing it, Mashi.
I'm seeing a lot of Pokemon stuff.
I told you.
Wait, let me see.
Gyarados is the evolution to Magikarp, dude.
Gyarados. Oh, now I'm on MTG Goldfish. And I'm looking at a Gyarados deck. Blue-black Gyarados. Standard.
How do you spell it?
This is the amazing content you want from Magic FM. I think it's Gyarados. Gyarados, am I? No, that's not getting me where I want to go.
Whoa. All right. So your destination for both Magic and MTG content, channelfireball.com.
I am not making this up. I did not imagine this.
This is a Pokemon.
I'm not. You know what? You're right. Gyarados is definitely a Pokemon. What the heck am I thinking of?
Wow. Oh, man.
Well.
You made my morning, Mashi.
You know what's funny is I don't even play Pokemon. I guess I did do a lot of Pokemon Go back in the day.
Yeah, I mean, you would have caught some Gyarados back in the day, I suppose.
Who am I thinking of?
Okay. Anyway, the point is, on CFP Pro, you can get members of Team CFP doing the work for you. And in fact, that is one of the advertising campaigns that was going on earlier. It was like, make Kiwi do the work for you. Which is really sweet, because if you ever want to get like totally up to speed on the deck and you're not super familiar with the format, it's really easy to do it that way. I have played a couple of arena events where I just hadn't played standard in forever and I just needed to read a deep dive. And I think once I did it with Luisa's deep dive, and once I did it with Mengu, and Mengu just bailed me out. Like, I played a deck and it had a sideboard guide and it explained everything about the format. It was awesome.
Gyaruda. It's Gyaruda.
Oh, that's okay. I forgot about Gyaruda.
Finally.
But yes.
But remember when Gyaruda was like the deck that everyone was playing when Ikoria came out? And so that's the kind of deck list I'm talking about. Gyaruda.
I forgot that Gyaruda existed. You're right.
Gyaruda. That's what I was thinking of. Okay. So yes. But for a while, that was like the hottest deck in Standard. And I remember there were all these deck guides on it on Channel 5. And it turned out Counterspell was really good against it. So it didn't end up being a dominant deck.
For like the first week of that format, that was like the most popular deck by far.
For sure. Yeah. For sure. So, okay.
Yeah. Well, we figured it out. For your Gyaruda and Gyarados needs, you can go to channelfireball.com. All right. So this week, we're talking about a really controversial topic. There really wasn't that much in like the form of Magic news exactly. Really nothing. Zendikar Rising Championship is this weekend. That's really kind of like the only news. There's nothing really for us to debate about that. Though what we are looking to doing, and this is a little teaser for next week's episode, is we want to try to get our friend, the Mighty Linguini, Caroline Kavanaugh, who is playing in her first Pro Tour this weekend. I mean, technically, this is the Zendikar Rising Championship, but it is a Pro Tour. Like, this is the closest we've had to a Pro Tour, except it's virtual, of course. So you do it from home. But she won the Venus Mercury League to qualify for it. And, you know, Caroline is a GP regular and grinder, and you know she's played in a ton of PTQs and a lot of qualifiers and stuff like that. So she won back-to-back championships for the Venus Mercury League to qualify for this one, and she's playing this weekend for the first time. So we wanted to get somebody to give us her first time at the PT experience.
And I think there's a ton here, because this is kind of this is the world we live in, and I don't know that we really go back. Like, I think there's a ton. I was actually randomly on a call one-on-one actually with Eric Levine, former level 4 judge, you know, his head judge, many Grand Prix, has judged tons of Pro Tours. And he was talking about, like, look, Mosh, just we're randomly just chatting. It's like, I don't really see a need to go back to competitive paper Magic. You can't cheat on Arena. There are no, like, you can't manipulate your shuffle. You can't draw extra cards. You can't do any of these things. Like, you can't sub cards in. You can't, you know, forget to sideboard or do this or do that. Like,
right. All those mistakes.
Or intentional cheats, you can't do it on Arena. And so there's a real good, you know, that's not what we're going to talk about today, but there's a real good question of whether competitive Magic should even be played in paper anymore.
Yeah.
And so this is, I love the idea of having Caroline on, because this could just be the future of competitive Magic. And this is someone whose first experience, she's coming to the table, experiencing it for the first time in any form in this new way, which is awesome, right? Because Luis plays in something like this, great. He's had years of playing in traditional pro tours,
right,
and Mythic Championship stuff. But this is really kind of the, I think, could just be the new face of how we engage in professional Magic.
I could totally see that. I mean, part of the reason I'm also really interested in having Caroline on is because I want to hear, you know, like, Caroline has been around the Magic scene and the Magic sphere for a really long time. You know, she's good friends with all of us here in Denver. And she, like, she's gone to pro tours having not played in them and stuff. Like, she is very familiar with the old school way of doing stuff. And I'm very curious to hear how her first experience with this being an online pro tour, how she experienced a pro tour that was virtual, having wanted to qualify for one of the paper ones. Like, I want to see if it lived up to her expectations, if it was lame. Like, we don't know, right? This was her first PT, and I am really curious to hear a firsthand experience of, like, hey, how was it? This was a very different pro tour than probably the one that you thought you would qualify to, because that's not the one that you had in mind, but this is the world we're living in. How was it? Like, regardless of how things go.
And it's going to be great. So next week, hopefully, we have Zendikar Championship top 8 competitor, Caroline.
That'd be so amazing. Can you imagine? Oh, my God.
That'd be great. I mean, she's back-to-back VML.
Yeah, she's back-to-back VML. No, Caroline's great at Magic. I'm like super stoked to root for her this weekend. I'm doing a Zendikar Rising Championship watch on my stream on Friday. So basically, nice. Like, what we have the championship on, except you're not watching it with a normal chat. You're just watching it with my chat, which is always like just chill and easygoing.
Yeah, that's awesome. Check twitch.tv/GabbySparts if you want just kind of a fun, chill place to watch it. I strongly recommend it.
Yeah.
So, okay. Reserve list, Gabby.
Yeah. So this is a hot button issue in the Magic community. It has been for basically its entire existence. I thought we could start out by kind of talking about what the reserve list is and why it exists. And then we can talk about, like, scenarios that could happen with a reserve list. Like, what if we get rid of it and stuff like that? Mashi, do you want to give our listeners kind of like
The background here?
Yeah, just the background of, like, what is the reserve list? Why does it exist? That sort of thing.
So the reserve list came around in 1996. They revised it in 2002 and in 2010. I remember when it was a thing. So this is like the old school perspective.
When did you start playing Magic? Was it before the reserve list existed or no?
Yes. Yeah. Oh, yeah. I played before the reserve list existed.
So did you see it get made? Like, did you see an announcement like the reserve list exists now? That's sort of, okay. Wow.
I mean, I wasn't cued into it. I was shopping at Superstars and so I heard about it.
Yeah.
If I remember correctly, I feel pretty good about it. This was at least my thought process at the time. And I think this is it. This was largely a reaction to Chronicles. So Chronicles is a set that is not really a good set. But what happened is it reprinted a ton of stuff from Legends, including cards that were really high value that I'm sure nobody remembers, like Carrion Ants and Killer Bees.
Carrion Ants? Wow.
Carrion Ants was like...
That's the one that has like fire breathing, right? For like an activated ability colorless mana or something? Oh, okay.
No, one colorless. One colorless.
I've played with it in Chandelar. I've definitely played with that card.
See? Yeah. Killer Bees is two green.
Ooh,
one.
Oh, I love Killer Bees.
+1/+1 and you pump it for green. That was another super expensive card. These cards were like very expensive. And then tons of random legends, Axelrod Gunnarsson, Solkanar the Swamp King, like that were worth a lot of money, were put in Chronicles. And I think there was a panic then, like, oh my gosh, they could just reprint this stuff and devalue it. Because now they were all white border. None of them were black border, right? Because Chronicles is a white border set. And I think as a reaction to that, if I recall correctly, Wizard said, okay, hey, we get it. This is what we're going to say. We're not going to reprint all the stuff on this list. And they've pruned it in 2002. I think they took a bunch of uncommons and commons off. And then in 2010, basically what happened is you could get things like there was a Judge Foil Gaia's Cradle, which is technically on the reserve list. And I think there was also some, I don't know if it wasn't Secret Lair, it was before Secret Lair, the one that goes to the stores. I can't remember what it's called right now, but they had some
like box promos or what?
No. It's like the, oh man, what are they called? The, like from the vault, the relics.
I think they had some
reserve list stuff in there, because their stance at the time was, if it's a premium offering or something like a Judge foil, like Guy's Cradle foil, Judge promo Guy's Cradle, if it's promo or if it's a premium offering, it's exempt from the reserve list. And that ended up not going over well. And so in 2010, they said, okay, no, we're not going to reprint them in any form, save digital. Like, it can be digital.
Sure.
Or it could be actually silver border. So this is important, or gold border, in the sense that, you know, they used to do these champs decks way back in the day, like the Pro Tour champs decks from like 97 to like 02 or 03, which I love. They could reprint those cards in that form because they're not game playable.
Yeah. Right? So I guess I wanted to just clarify for listeners who maybe don't know what silver border and gold border are. Silver border are cards that are not tournament legal, and are also kind of fake cards. So like all the unsets. Yeah, unglued, yeah. Unhinged, I'm forgetting the third name. The cards like Blast from the Past or Booster Trigger, cards that you could not play in a tournament, those are silver bordered. The gold bordered ones are cards that are real cards, except that specific card is not tournament legal, like the champs decks that Mashi's mentioning, which have become actually quite popular in the last couple of years because they're real versions of the card. You just can't play them in the tournament. So they become really popular in things like Commander or Cube.
Cube. Yeah.
Cube being like the biggest one. Exactly. Yeah. You get to play with a cheaper version of the card that's not tournament legal, but it looks and acts like the normal card.
Yep. And so you can print these cards like that. And they've also exempted functional reprints.
Yeah.
Right. So you can't, Badlands, which is a dual land, counts as a swamp and a mountain, and taps to add one, you know, black or one red to your mana pool. You can't just say, okay, I'm going to reprint Mashi lands and it's going to count as a mountain and a swamp, and you can tap to add one.
And when it ETBs, you gain one life. Like that is functionally the same thing. And so that's prohibited as well.
Yeah. Yeah. And they've done a lot here, and ostensibly, like, really, this was meant to protect the collectors in 96 and maybe in 2010. I don't know. I'm a retailer. I get that, but I have been pretty against maintaining the reserve list for a very long time. Like, if you go back, there's Magic TVs I've done with Cheon before he was at Wizards of the Coast. Well, before he was at Wizards of the Coast, just because I don't want anything to be like, well, someone from Wizards.
Well, that's what Wizards would say. Yeah.
Yeah. No. And I've done Magic TVs with Luis even before that, just talking about how I think we're well past the time to abolish the reserve list. I don't think it serves any function for the vast majority of players, because the vast majority of players don't have cards on the reserve list. And most of them that I do know, by the way, legacy players who have like LEDs, because LEDs on there, or vintage players who have jewelry or Black Lotus, they're actually okay with it, because that means more people will play their formats.
Right.
And so this is meant to protect a very narrow,
small amount of people who actually have these cards that are collectors.
Right.
So I guess something that is really interesting that I want us to weave into this conversation, it doesn't have to be like its whole separate thing, is the fact that Magic these days is way more of a player game. Like, it's just way more of a game than it is like the collectible part of it. Like, yes, of course, there's people out there collecting power, but it feels to me like, especially in the last couple of years, it's way more about getting the cards you want to play the decks you want. And your cards aren't like really holding the value the same way that these old cards on the reserve list are holding the value, which I guess you can make the argument that because the reserve list exists, then that's why those cards are holding the value. But really, it just hasn't really been like that. So it also makes me question, like, what is the purpose of still having a reserve list in there if Magic doesn't feel like that much of a collectible game these days?
I mean, I couldn't agree more. And one of the things we've seen with the state of the world now with COVID and everything is, you know, what's going to be weird is if anyone starts listening to this era of not just Magic FM, but other podcasts, how much we all talk about COVID, like, 5 years from now, if anyone's listening, I hope people listen to Magic FM 5 years from now. But you can hear an episode like this and like, yeah, they really spent a lot of time talking about COVID, don't they? But
yes, oh my God.
you know, all the social media, like, cause I listen to fantasy football podcasts and there's it, COVID has such an effect on sports and stuff. So it's just going to be an interesting artifact of our time here. But one of the things we see with COVID, and we've definitely seen this in Channel Fireball, is we're doing a bunch of Pokemon. We're doing a bunch with Flesh and Blood. Those are collectible card games. There are things you can collect in those games. Magic is flatlining. The paper Magic community, the paper Magic market is flatlining because it's not collectible. It's a card game. It's not, it's game first, collectible second. Nothing that gets printed now is truly collectible. Wizards is trying that with the hyper, you know, the Zendikar
collectors and the secret layers, toppers and stuff like that. Yeah.
But by and large, this is not a collectible game anymore. And, you know, I think that there should be some recognition of that. Now, I think exactly what you've said is the counterpoint. You go, okay, well, Mosh, Gabby, yeah. And the only reason that other stuff is collectible is because of the reserve list. I don't think people are running out there buying like Feroz's ban or worried that it's, I don't even know what that does, yeah, but I know it's on the reserve list that's going to get reprinted, right?
So, you
know,
I mean, I guess that the interesting thing about the reserve list is that there, yes, there are all these cards that are in the reserve list that are like the really high ticket items, like the really collectible stuff. But there's also just so much stuff in the reserve list that's like, who's out there buying, trying to collect this stuff? They're like just nonsense. Let me see if I can find some of the nonsense cards here.
I think it does buoy up some of these. Like, there's, like, I think Wood Elemental from Legends, which is one of the worst cards ever printed. It's just a trash card. I think it's on there because I think it's a rare.
Yeah, it is. I can read you Wood Elemental. It's awful. A 4-mana star. This is this tree that looks like all menacing. Stars is the lower right-hand corner are set to the number of untapped forests you sacrifice when Wood Elemental is brought into play. I think by many considered the worst Magic card of all time. So basically you need 4 mana to sack it, then once or to cast it. Then once you're doing that, you have to sack forests to create its power and toughness. And it's only ever going to be like, I mean, you could incinerate everything if you want, I guess. But like you're getting like a 2/2, like it's like a 4-mana 2/2 or something. It's just awful.
Yeah.
And this card is in the reserve list and no one's out there trying to collect this card.
But so here's the thing, though, is Legends prices singles are buoyed up because and not just the reserve list cards, but commons and uncommons from Legends, which are not on the reserve list, are buoyed up because of the rarity of the product. It doesn't have to do with whether the card can be reprinted or not. Sure, that I'm not going to say that doesn't help. I understand that can help, but the product itself is rare. And so getting those cards, whether they're in danger of being reprinted or not, is driving the value up. Okay. I mean, the way I look at it is like there are Mickey Mantle cards that are original Mickey Mantle cards. You can reprint them. You can reprint those exact cards today. Guess what? That value is, you know, that's not going to hurt the value of those original printed Mickey Mantle cards. Right. Maybe that's too far back in time. There's an old scorecard, which was Bo Jackson. And it's him in, I remember this was such a chase card when I was a kid. This is from the 90s, right? It was just before Magic came out, but he's in shoulder pads and he was the first dual athlete, right? Played baseball and football. And he's got a baseball bat. You could reprint that exact card. It's not going to hurt the value of the original. That's the reason these things are collectible, in my opinion, is there's a lot of nostalgia involved with them. Okay. I don't know. I don't want to say that there's no amount of vintage players that want Black Lotuses to play with Black Lotuses that are driving the price up. But I don't think that's what's really driving that price up, that people want to buy it to play with it. People want to buy it to collect it. The reserve list does protect that value. But I also think that protection is A, overrated, and B, getting rid of the reserve list doesn't mean Wizards puts Black Lotus in Kaldheim or Strixhaven. That is not going to happen. They're not going to just run out there and reprint power and reprint Lotuses. That is just not reality. The ability to do something doesn't mean that you will do it, right? That's what gets me every time.
Also, if you look at some of the other CCGs that are pretty popular, you know, they don't have a reserve list. Part of what drives the original price of that card existing is the fact that it got printed 20 years ago or whatever, like 25 years ago. It's not that there's an inability to print it ever again. And so you take a look at like the Charizards of the world in Pokemon, the Charizards of the world in Pokemon are really expensive because they were first edition. They're not super expensive because you can get the unlimited version of it and it's not going to cost anything. Like, I have an unlimited version of that Charizard in my house. It's worth like $2 or something. It's just worth nothing because it didn't really matter. It, like, the thing that was valuable about it is that this was a version of the card that was printed 25 years ago. That's what's valuable. And it's in really good condition, not whether or not you could print it again.
Exactly. I mean, how much has the infinite reprintings of Lightning Bolt hurt the value of Beta Lightning Bolt? All the reprints of Counterspell hurt Beta Counterspell?
You can get Counterspells these days, and they, like, there's like how many different arts of Counterspell? There's so many. There's like five or something. But the original Counterspell, probably more, yeah. But the original Counterspell is, that's the one that's worth something because it's, how many? How many do you have?
No, that's like the original
Counterspell. It's like this, right? I think. Yeah, absolutely. And so that ends up being the case. So we're talking a big game about, like, well, why not get rid of the reserve list? I would like us to talk a little bit about maybe what else is going on here and reasons maybe the reserve list still around, slash what would happen if maybe Wizards were to get rid of it.
Sure.
So I think here's like the big concern. It's, what do all the people who own the old cards, what they would do if the reserve list were to get to disappear? And I think by and large, people think that people would sue Wizards. Like,
yep.
Companies would sue Wizards and people would sue Wizards because that's the whole point of the reserve list, is this promise that these cards are never going to get reprinted. So if they were to get reprinted, even if it didn't change the value of the old school Taiga by that much, like, you could still prove that there have been damages, right?
Unless the value went up.
But the value's not going to go up, right? Like, how would it go
it
up?
It could.
Why would the value go up?
Let's say you reprint Lion's Eye Diamond or you reprint Dual Lands, and all of a sudden Legacy becomes a more popular format because it's way more accessible. Now there's more players playing that format. And what do Legacy mean? Like, maybe it's like, oh, I love Legacy. This is my favorite format now. I've got these dual lands. Oh, wait. I want the cool dual lands. I want the cool lands.
Sure. You're like the Louis Scott Vargases of the world who are like, I need Jame Day Tome Beta. I won't play anything that's right. Like in a corset.
I mean, you saw this. you saw this with old school. When old school Magic took off, all of the older versions of these cards, like all of the beta versions, like Jame Day Tome used to be like a
Jame Day Tome, super expensive now.
Super expensive now. It's all because of old school. So there is, I mean, would that happen? I'm not saying it would happen, but I'm saying it could happen. If you got enough new players in there who were interested in basically like having like super luxe versions of their decks, the price and the demand on these cards could go up. Okay, so that's one use case. The other thing is, one of the ways I think you get around this is you don't wake up on Monday morning and say, hey, check out the Wizards website. They just got rid of the reserve list. You do something like, you say, hello world. It's January 1st, 2021. Just an FYI. As of January 1st, 2026, we will no longer be honoring the reserve list. You get 5 years or something like that.
And then do you just play that GIF from Mean Girls where Regina's just standing there and everybody's running around, like burning the place down and attacking each other? Is this exactly?
I mean, I think you got to give a timeline, because what happens here is, you know, you can't have someone say, hey, I bought this yesterday with this expectation, and tomorrow, and now today you're saying that expectation's crazy, but I relied on you. Like, I believe that this was a thing. But if I say 5 years from now, whatever arbitrary timeline, this is going to go away, you know it or you should have known it. So don't tell me you bought that Lotus today when I said yesterday in 5 years we're going to get rid of it. That doesn't count
anymore. Okay, but so here's just pretend that this is a specific scenario. I decided today that all I've ever wanted in life is Black Lotus, whatever. Like, that's, mm-hmm. I just decided, and I pulled out bunch of money from savings accounts to buy it, and I got it. I did a deal and I bought my Black Lotus and I'm stoked. And then tomorrow Wizards goes out and says, hey, by the way, we're gonna get rid of the reserve list in 5 years. Like, let's say we give it a really long timeline. what happened? Like, wouldn't the price of the cards just change immediately as soon as that happens? Like, don't you think people are going to go out there and try to dump as many Lotuses as they can? Because once, you know what I mean? So isn't at that point, it's already too late, right? By saying that you're getting rid of the reserve list in 5 years, didn't you cause the same damage?
You could have. There's an argument for that. But the problem is, Gabby, you'd have to say, I bought it and I paid this price relying on the reserve list. I don't know how many people are, and I could be totally off here. I don't know how many people are buying these cards going, boy, the only reason I'm buying this or the main reason I'm buying this is because of the reserve list. You have to, I mean, it actually has to be, it can't just be something in the back. It actually has to be a motivating factor.
Right. That's interesting. I hadn't thought about that.
So you can't just say, oh, because it was a reserve list. It's like, did you know about the reserve list? No, I didn't. But now that I know it's gone, I'm damaged. No, you weren't. You didn't do anything relying on it. You didn't know about it. You weren't buying with that expectation. And I will say a lot, not all by any stretch of imagination. A lot of Lotuses that we have sold, a lot of power that we've sold, are bucket list items. People don't, a lot of customers don't care. Now, other vendors, that's totally different, right? They're buying it as an investment. But there are a substantial number of people who buy high-end Magic cards as literally bucket list items. I always wanted a Black Lotus when I was a kid. I always wanted a Beta Shivan Dragon when I was a kid. Mm-hmm. You know, I always wanted blank when I was a kid. And so I think that there's a lot of that, and people don't care about the reserve list. You know, those buyers don't care about the reserve list.
Sure.
Vendors, dealers, I don't think this is a problem of individual customers. This is a problem of vendors. Vendors who, you know, there's rumors about vendors who years ago were buying up. And I know Sasso was part of this too, because he was just buying up tons of power.
Yeah, I was going to say, this is not even rumors. Like, I've heard a bunch of stuff like this, that people just, there's some people out there who just have like a ton of the product.
Stockpiled.
Yeah, they just have it stockpiled. So what happens if the same people, like if you change the reserve list on them, like what's going to happen then?
I mean, so there's a few things that can happen here, right? First of all, you're only covered. I think that what you can say is, because some people can say, look, this was an investment in the future, but you just don't know what's going to happen. That's one thing we all, like, I today, mean, all we all these, recognize that.
All of these being investments in the future is predicated on Magic continuing to exist as a game. Right. And like, there's no assurances. Like, there's nothing written in a contract that says Magic is going to exist until the year 2025. And after that, who knows? You know, like, that's just not a thing.
And what happens in this scenario is, if you want to make an argument that that's actually not true, right? No, there's nostalgia here. Magic doesn't have to continue. It's a game for these to hold value. Well, then you're arguing that it doesn't matter what Magic does, the collectability of the card, because of nostalgia, because of its place in pop culture, cements its value, then the reserve list doesn't matter. Mm-hmm. So you're really stuck. If you're arguing about this, you're really, really stuck. And I think you have to use present value. So what's the worst case scenario here? If Wizards really wanted to get rid of this, they could say, and I don't, this would never happen, but they could say, all right, this is what we believe the fair market price for Black Lotuses in this condition are, and go through the whole reserve list, say this, and say, we're running the reserve list in 5 years. You have 1 month. You have 1 month to sell us your cards at this rate.
Oh, and they buy it back?
And they buy it back.
Wow.
And you can choose to keep it?
I guess you really don't have an out to complain if that's the case.
If it's fair market price.
Can you imagine how expensive that would be, though?
Oh.
Oh, I mean, my God.
Money. They would never do it. They would never do it. But here's the other thing, by the way. It's a gamble. You probably end up buying a lot of wood elementals. Okay. you probably don't end up buying that much power.
That many ancestrals or like, yeah.
People are going to hold on to them. That's my point. But you have the out. You say, if you want to get rid of it. Now, Wizards would never do that. And it's a calculated risk, but I don't think all of a sudden they're going to buy 1,000 Black Lotuses. That's just not, people are going to hold on to their Lotuses. Because, like I said, with the Mickey Mantle, the Bo Jackson card, there is nostalgia. Black Lotus is a card that you can, random people on the street of a certain age, you could say, hey, do you know what a Black Lotus is for Magic? Oh, yeah.
I've heard of that card. People just know what it is, yeah.
It has a place in pop culture, and that doesn't rely on the reserve list. Now, if you said something like, hey, do you know what a Mox Ruby is? No, you're not going to get that. You know what Ancestral Recall is? No, you're not going to get that, right? But I genuinely feel like you could, there is a way you could accomplish this with some risk. You know, some people would sue. you know? And the way you could be ultra careful with it is say, hey, we are going in 2 years, we're going to consider in the next 2 years or 2 years from today, we are going to revisit whether the reserve list stays intact.
Oh.
Now, in 2 years, we may say, oh, you know what? We're going to keep it.
But that,
or we could say,
that
no,
gives,
gonna...
that gives people some of that like heads up to,
right.
Hey, maybe the reserve list could be gone. So if you have ever been thinking about getting rid of your cards, maybe now's a good time.
Yeah, it's kind of like, you know how suspensions are so successful and historic?
Oh my
it's
God.
Like, we suspend a card, we don't ban it. It's like the exact same. It's like Wizards loves this. In 2 years, we're going to make an announcement. And in 2 years, we're going to make an announcement.
It's an announcement
calendar
for an announcement for the reserve list.
Yeah. I mean, so my point is, you don't flip a switch. There's ways where I think you drip this out. And the exposure really is, what's the market value of every card on the reserve list right now? Okay, that's probably your total damages. Because again, investment in the future, that's totally speculative. That's one. And then part two is the real exposure. The real exposure is, what's the total amount current, I think, market value mm-hmm. for these cards, and how many people would be willing to cash them in? How many want to sell them?
Right.
I think you would. Now, some of the high-end stuff, there are people I think who have bought them as investments who would say, forget it, I guess now's the time to cash out.
Right.
And they would.
And I mean, I think they'd come out ahead. Like the cost of how much power and some of the old school like alpha and beta cards have gone up is, I've seen people track like the price of old cards to like the stock market over the mm-hmm. same period of time. And it's like, mm-hmm. you would have like 2x or 3x the amount of money that you would have done
totally.
On a normal investment easily with some mm-hmm. of the old cards, because that's just how much the price has gone up over the last couple of years.
If an announcement like this would happened, okay, and there was a run on power and other reserve list items, I can promise you Channel Fireball would be buying.
Yeah.
It's just, I because again, just because Wizard says in 5 years we're getting on the reserve list, that doesn't mean January 1st, 2026, welcome to Secret Lair power. That's not
going to happen, for sure.
That's not the reality. Now, dual lands, yes. I think dual lands, we'd see again.
I think
Lion's Eye Diamond.
I think the more functional cards, you would be much more likely to see them come out in some variant like sooner. Mm-hmm. Because I think one of the big reasons that people want the reserve list gone, in fact, I think maybe the biggest reason that people don't like it, is because it makes all the older formats totally inaccessible. Like, playing old school, playing vintage, playing any of these old formats, it's basically impossible. Like, honestly, Mashi, at GP Vegas, there's always a old school tournament. Like, it's happened the last couple of GP Vegas. It's obviously not this year. And honestly, when I see people just playing with their old school cards, it kind of gives me anxiety. Like, it legit, because so much of the old school decks, like all the cards, and also the old school community is very into like, you can't play with an M13 JM Daytome. You have to play with the old school one. So it's all the old super expensive cards. And I like see Luis shuffling his old school deck, or I see Randy shuffling his old school deck. And I'm just like, how are you? Like, I don't feel comfortable carrying something that expensive in my backpack. Like, what are you doing?
Agreed.
You know?
Agreed.
And it would help mitigate that. Like, it would make vintage way more popular. Because right now, the vintage tournaments that happen with like 10 proxies allowed or something. Because like, who has money to put these decks together, you know?
I mean, there is an alternative here. If you wanted to take the collectors really, really seriously, this is awful. I don't endorse this, but just ban reserve list cards from tournament play.
Oh my God. That'd be so,
guess
so
what?
Bad, like, though. Like, you just incinerate the format, though.
Legacy's now accessible. Vintage is now accessible, right? Like,
everybody would lose their shit, dude.
Here's the weird thing about it, right? Here's the weird thing about it is, reserve list stuff, it's like, no, we need the reserve list. We need to do that. Don't worry, you know, about the players and stuff. What do you think happens to the value of those cards? What happens to the value of power if it gets banned from vintage? What happens to the value of Lion's Eye Diamond if it gets banned from legacy?
I guess in people's collective, some of these cards would remain very valuable just because of their place in history. But that is predicated on people remembering what these cards used to be.
Lion's Eye Diamond, definitely not. I think Lion's Eye Diamond goes back to the junk rare drawer. Yeah, if it gets banned.
I have had so many people talk to me about like back when LED was a junk rare, and I'm like, lol, oh, yeah. Here I am trying to buy an LED for my cube and I just have a proxy because yeah, it's so expensive. I
mean, LED, Glimpse of Nature used to be a junk rare before Louis won in Berlin. And I mean, yeah, there's the list of cards that have flipped, especially LED is one of the most egregious that just like completely changed. But the fact is, if you ban that card, it just, there's no value to that card anymore. It right. goes back to being a 25-cent rare, I think. Or a cube and maybe Commander.
Commander, maybe. Sure. But like then when you're talking, yeah. I mean, in all the formats where there's singleton, you're still not going to get that much of it because like you don't need a playset. You just need one.
You know, when you're playing Commander, a playset's like 10 or 12, by the way.
What do you mean?
I don't know any Commander player who has like less than 10 decks.
Okay, yeah, that's true. I saw
like a playset of Soul Rings.
You're totally right. I was gonna say Ellie of the Veil, who is a CFP mm-hmm. affiliate, was opening a gift we sent to her. It was like the Ultimate Magic gift box, which by the way is really cool if you want to buy a gift to a Magic player in your life. Absolutely. The Ultimate Magic mm-hmm. gift box is great. I think the 24 pack may be sold out at this point, but she
we restocked.
Love it. Okay, it was just yeah. sold out. Anyway, so she opens the box and there's like the promo Soul Rings, and she's like, "Oh my god, CFB, my homies, they sent me the CFB like the Grand Prix Soul Ring, which is great because yesterday I got inspired and I just built a bunch of Commander decks and I didn't want to have to be moving the Soul Rings back and forth."
It's so true. Like I you know, that was definitely an eye-opening thing for me. Commander staples are not one of play sets. They're like 8 to 10 to 12 is a play set of Soul Rings for Commander players because they are in every deck, and Commander players have, I think, like so many decks, you know. So it's for players, so many players, yeah, Julie's not happy about something. So many players are against the reserve list. I think players, this is just a question. This is kind of what you posed earlier, Gabby, of like players versus collectors. Players don't want the reserve list. Collectors do. Magic has a crisis of identity right now. It is not a collectible card game, in my opinion. It is a card game. It is a great card. It's the best card game. It's possibly the best game. I love it. Don't get me wrong. It's, you know, but it's not a collectible card game anymore. Who do you want to satisfy here? Because if you want to satisfy players and give them access to more formats and more ways to play your game and monetize it, right? Because Wizards doesn't care about Vintage. Wizards doesn't care about Legacy. And why should they? They don't sell products for those formats.
Right.
They don't convert. They don't monetize them.
They don't help Wizards. Like, it doesn't help their goals. All. Right.
And so you have this vestige of a reserve list. By the way, nobody cares. I think it's nothing from Mercadian Masks forward. Is reserve
yeah, so
listable.
So there's
it is
been
just done.
Yeah, so there's a couple of revisions that they've done because the reserve list was made in 1996 and then it was revised in 2002 and then again in 2010. The 2002 revision was that no cards from the Mercadian Mask sets and later would ever be reserved. Commons and uncommons from limited edition were removed from the reserve list due to overwhelming public support for this change. That was the 2002 revision. And then the 2010 revision was basically you can't print cards from the reserve list in premium version. Like you can't put them in secret layers, for example, because back then they did a dual decks for Phyrexia versus the Coalition. And they did From the Vault Relics that had cards from the reserve list and people got mad. They got mad. So then starting in 2011, no cards in the reserve list would be printed in either premium or non-premium form. It was like, hey, if this is in the reserve list, it just doesn't get reprinted. That was a change.
What? I really wonder, I don't remember, I was back practicing, I wasn't at Channel Fireball. What was the brouhaha over the FTV? And when you say people got mad, because in my experience, I actually don't know a single person. And please at me if you're listening to this.
And you were mad?
Not if you were mad. If you're pro-reserve list. If you are in favor of the reserve list, I would like to hear from you.
Yes.
I actually don't know anyone.
No one's in favor of the reserve list. I think everyone's just like, I think the way people see the reserve list these days is, hey, Wizards committed to doing this thing, and now they're in too deep. Like, it's like a game of chicken, but they just can't call anymore. Like, it's just, it's gone too long.
It is questionable decision at the time. Young company needed to say something. Should have had an expiration on it. No question. Okay. But it's not helping things. It's not helping players. It's helping a very small segment of vendors. And I mean that because most vendors would be overwhelmingly happy if there was a product that had things like dual lands in it. Right. I tell you, Channel Fireball.
Yeah. Let us sell Black Lotus. Yo, we're excited.
Yeah. You want to have a product that has LEDs in it? Great. You know how well that's going to sell? You know how much that's going to help LGSs who, once in-store play is back, can host other games in other formats? Standard sucks. Legacy's inaccessible. So's modern. Historic's an online format. Well, you know, what are we going to play? Right? So if you want to take things like Paper Magic seriously, right? Because Paper Magic is a Commander format right now. Commander is the only thing driving Paper Magic. So if you got rid of the reserve list and you had things like Legacy and even Modern less so, right? Because Modern is all reprintable, I guess. We have things like Legacy and Vintage accessible for new players, for a growing community. That is where you could possibly grow Paper Magic. And that would be wonderful for LGSs, you know, once this is all over, that can have in-store play for product. Don't do this through secret layers. Don't do any of that stuff. Like, give LGSs and vendors an opportunity to recover from everything we've gone through right now. Make it a product that's sellable through your store that you can support your LGS with, and do that. Vendors would be so happy. So it's like this very, very small contingent of
collectors. It's not just vendors, Mashi. I think people would be happy to do that. Like, the gamers
would love it.
There's just been, it's not just from the, like, now I have the cool card that I want perspective, but I think a lot of people who learn how to play Magic by going to an LGS feel this, like, love and devotion to LGSs. I certainly feel it. And it's not to us specific LGS, even though I love Dice Dojo in Chicago. I love you, fam. But it's not, it's to LGSs in general. It's not specifically to that shop where I learned how to play. It's about the fact that LGSs are awesome. And I want to do, like, what I can to support them, because the Game Center of the world, the Dice Dojos of the world, are out there creating a space where people can connect with this awesome game they love and play Magic and play tournaments and make friendships and just develop all these bonds that I think are super important and a really big part of the Magic playing experience. So, like, it's like just gravy, right? If you tell me, hey, this cool product is both a card you want and also really helps support the local shops, which you love, I'm like, yeah, shut up and take my money. Just
exactly.
I'd be stoked. You know, I'd be stoked to support LGSs that way.
It's Magic. Magic happens online now. And we have things like Arena, which is wonderful. I try to play once a day. I play at least one match a day on Arena. I love Arena. It's gotten me back into playing, you know, both Constructed and Limited. It's wonderful. Magic happens during COVID. Magic happens online. Magic is migrating now in many ways out of necessity online, mm-hmm. right? But the Gathering is all about those stores.
Yeah.
Right. LGSs are where we gathered, where we got excited for pre-releases, where we showed up at midnight to get, you know, whatever, buy a box promo or
to do that midnight pre-release, dude, to do something stupid like the midnight pre-releases.
We had a huge turnout for the midnight pre-release back during, God, is it Shadowmoor or Eventide, where you got Figure of Destiny? And I mean, those things, you know, any old school players have these stories about those midnight pre-releases where you were there till 3 and ended up at Denny's or somewhere else.
Three is early, dude.
Midnight to three.
Dude, my LGS, Dice Dojo, they used to do Swiss cut to top bait for the pre-release. And that's when I was going to the midnight pre-releases, because I stopped very soon after. I was way too old to be doing midnight pre-releases. But we were there until the sun rose, and then we go get breakfast at the end.
Oh, my God. I lived that life, and it was, I mean, for me, you know, I'm super lucky, right? Because Channel Fireball used to be Superstars, and that is my LGS. That's the store I grew up in. There's another one in Santa Cruz where I really learned competitive Magic, Triple C. It's not there anymore. And I literally, I don't go to Santa Cruz very much. I don't drive down the 17 very much. Every time I do, I look at that exit and it's just like,
It just brings you back, right?
Feel it, right? Yeah. I'm like, oh man, this is where I'd get off for Cripple C. The number of Friday nights I drove out there for F&M and like all those memories. I fell off a skateboard and face planted in front of there.
Oh my God.
So I was stupidly like trying out a skateboard. I mean, this number of stupid things that happened to me, like playing Magic there, and I had one of my best wins in an F&M there, you know, and just the memories I have playing there and the memories I had growing up in Superstars, you know, those are the things that we lose when we lose LGS.
Right.
We're not going to lose Magic. You can still play online.
I also feel like you don't have to, like, it doesn't have to be the sort of thing where you have to choose. Like the fact that some people will start playing Magic because they saw an ad for Magic the Gathering Arena and they decided to download it doesn't mean that that's not a person that can't then later go on to play FNM, like, or play in Grand Prix. I had this experience when we went to play in the pre-release. I think it was the Theros Beyond Death pre-release. That's what it was. And we went to a local shop here in Denver. It's called the Wizard's Chest, which is just downtown. And when we were playing in our pod and doing one of the drafts that we just did for like a random FNM that Caroline wanted to go to, we met this guy who learned Magic online, and this was the first time he was coming to a paper tournament, and it was so cool because he 3-0'd, and it was one of those you know, like the drafts where you rare redraft at the end based on how well you did.
He like, I love that, by the way.
Which is so fun, yes, because it lets you draft the normal deck and then also like get cool prices if you did well, and he was so stoked, like he thought it was so cool. And so you also got to see, hey, Magic the Gathering Arena was a great tool to get this person into the game. Mm-hmm. And now they came to the local shop and they made some friends. And that's really neat. And so I don't think you have to only have the online version or only have the paper version. It's like,
oh my gosh,
there's totally this world where both of these can exist and you can have a lot of crossover between the two. And there's no reason that that guy that we met that went to his first FNM that time doesn't end up traveling to Grand Prix later on because he loves Magic and he loves the Gathering. And so anything, I am very much for anything that I think helps local shops, because I think that's already a really difficult business to be in. And I am very anti-reserve list because I look at it and I'm like, who does this help? Huh?
Nobody I care about. Again, if you are listening to this, please at Mashi Scanlon, at Gabby Sparks, at Magic FM Podcast. If you are pro reserve list, I'd love to hear why. And I'm not, I mean, I would never attack anyone, but I'm not going to attack you. I just want to know like what the thought process is.
It very much is just, this is if you are invested, really invested in the cards that are in the reserve list, I think that's the only time you're pro reserve list. And that's why almost everybody is anti reserve list. And in us talking about this today, guess what? It comes out, we're both anti reserve list.
We are.
I don't have
any power. Fair enough. But Luis has power and he's anti-reserve.
Oh, he's anti-reserveless, right? Like, I mean, too.
Yeah. Everyone I know that has power is just like, no, I mean, like they just want to play more Magic. Like, because most people I know are players. They're not collectors, right? And they just want to play more Magic with these cards. And if they weren't reserve listed, there's probably an opportunity for that. I do want to say as we outro here, I cannot just endorse what you said enough, Gabby. Like if you are an online player, when it's safe, when COVID is clear, find an LGS, give it a try, go engage with that community. And guess what? If it's a bad fit, give it two or three. Not every LGS is right. You got to find the right fit.
That's
try
absolutely
two, maybe
true.
Try three. I promise you, when you find a good LGS, it magnifies and changes your experience with this game so much. So much on so many levels. Likewise, if you're struggling and you miss your LGS, try online play. Like I it's great. It's worked for me, but I just cannot encourage anyone who's only played Magic online to find a game store when it's safe, when things are back to quote unquote normal, and find that community, because it's going to make everything.
There's just something different about playing paper Magic. There's something so different about playing with a person across from you.
Yeah.
Than like when you're just used to, I don't know, sometimes in Arena, I feel like so brainless. I feel like I'm just playing from instinct.
Click.
Yeah, I'm not even thinking about it. I'm just like, drag a land, drop the two drop, play another land, play my three drop. Like I'm not even thinking about it. It's just all muscle memory. And that, it's not the same when you're playing against the person in paper. It's a very different experience. And it's really like not the online experience at all. So I would... echo what Mashi's saying so much. Like LGSs are so cool, and I love being able to support a local LGS when I can. Like
same Same. We got to find ways to do that now. So yeah. we don't lose them all. So, well, there you have it. That is the Magic FM. You know, I'll even timestamp it. That's the Magic FM December 3rd, 2020 take on.
There you go. I'm sure I like it.
It'll come up again.
Oh, certainly. Basically, it seems what would be the summary, just to put a bow on it? It seems very unlikely that Wizards is one going to get rid of the reserve list in the near future, but everybody's for it.
Yeah.
Is that the summary?
Yeah. And I think that, the reality is, I think that Wizards can just be like, you know what? We'll just do it digital. That's our route. We'll put it on Arena. We'll put it on Magic. It's already on Magic Online, right?
Yeah. They did put power in Magic Online with the old art and everything. But the reserve list specifically says that online is the only way you can do that. That's why
non-redeemable.
That's why also there was a Black Lotus on MTG Arena for that special Theros Beyond Death event. And like, it wasn't a problem because nobody can do anything with it.
Yeah. Because it's totally different. And you know, it doesn't hurt collectability. So, well, there you have it. That is this week's Magic FM. We took a week off. It's good to be back. Thank you for hanging with us this week. You can find me on social media, the guy on the left, at Mashi Scanlon. You can find Gabby at Gabby Sparts or on her stream, twitch.tv/Gabby Sparts. If this comes out in time, check it out tomorrow. She's doing a watch party for the Zendikar Championships. Well, we have tons of people to root for, but Carolyn will also be in our top eight competitor.
Yo, baby,
Carolyn,
let's go.
The Mighty Linguini next week on Magic FM, hopefully. So thank you so much for hanging with us. You can find us online, as we mentioned at the beginning, at Magic FM Podcast on Twitter. We're on YouTube. We're on channelfireball.com for the video component. If you're listening to us as a podcast, hit subscribe. If you're shopping CFB Pro or Channel Fireball, use our code MAGICFM. That helps support this podcast and all the content that Gabby and I make together. And we surely do appreciate that. That does it for this week. Thank you again. And until next week, be wonderful to yourself and be wonderful to each other.
Bye-bye.